Good morning, everybody. My name is Norma Camacho, and I am the chair of the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. And today is Thursday, June 27th, and it is 9:01. And I would like to officially call this meeting to order. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary website is available. There is a direct link to the webcast on the meeting agenda posted on our website. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform, as well as in person. And for people who want to listen or watch the meeting in Spanish, we have Spanish interpretation services available through the Zoom platform. And instructions are going to be shown on the slide. And I will ask Mr. Rafael Landa to come forward to explain the instructions in Espanol. Excuse me. Let's put on the mic. Thank you. Yeah, there we go.
Tendremos servicio de interpretación en español. Si algún asistente desea escuchar esta presentación en español, busque en su pantalla este icono de interpretación. Ahora verá los canales de idiomas. Haga clic en español. Para esto opcional, para escuchar solo en español, haga clic en silenciar audio original. Una observación, para usar la función de interpretación de idioma, los participantes tienen que descargar la aplicación de Zoom en su desktop, teléfono inteligente o tableta. Para ayuda técnica o de interpretación de idioma, envíe un mensaje a bov@agpvideo.com.
Thank you very much. Also, please note that for all Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board meetings, there is no expectation of privacy regarding any communications. Meetings are recorded and names of participants are listed in the Zoom forum. Participation in a recorded meeting will be deemed consent to be recorded. And so we'll go to the first item, which is roll call. Ms. Roll. Okay.
Good morning, everyone. A board member Ashion. Chair Camacho.
Here.
Board member Christensen.
Here.
Board member Mendez.
Here.
Vice Chair Nahai.
Yes.
Roll call complete. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll go to item number 2, the order of the agenda, and I'll turn to the executive officer for any potential changes.
Chair, there are no changes today to the agenda.
Thank you very much. So we'll go on to item number 3, which is approval of the draft meeting minutes. Do we have any motions? Okay, moved by Vice Chair Nahai.
Second,
thank you very much. Let's go ahead and do a roll call.
Chair Camacho.
Yes.
Board Member Christensen.
Yes.
Board Member Mendez.
Yes.
Vice Chair Nahai.
Yes.
Motion carries, thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll go on to item number 4, which is Board Member Communications. And first, I'd like to ask if any board members have ex parte disclosures to declare. No. And I see none. We'll go to 4B, which is board member reports. And I'll go ahead and start with board member Mendez.
Nothing to report.
And I'll move on to vice chair Nahai.
I'm going to jump on the bandwagon and say nothing to report.
Nothing to report. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I do have a few things to report. I've been a little bit busy lately. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about, On May 31st, we did have a Water Board's chair meeting in Sacramento, and some of the items that we did discuss was nutrient management. We talked about AB 2108 compliance. We went over the racial equity survey and had a discussion on tribal beneficial uses. And then moving on to June 12th, we did have an interview with a Southern California news group, LAist, in regards to the fireworks permit. And so they essentially want to know how the permits work, what the process is, what's our interface with the Coastal Commission regarding permitting, and why these permits are necessary. And then on June the 12th, I also attended a Safe Clean Water Program Regional Oversight Committee meeting, and we further discussed performance measurements and population indicators, as well as went over the watershed plan development timelines. And so there is going to be a move towards setting a goal of May 2025 to have initial watershed plans for all nine watershed areas. And they've also developed a WASC engagement plan. And meetings will start from July of 2024 at the kickoff, and then they will continue on to the spring of 2025. I also had, after that meeting, a meeting with Heal the Bay and LA Waterkeeper, and we just updated each other but did not discuss anything in regards to any pending permits. And then I had the opportunity also and the honor of attending the groundbreaking ceremony of the Arlington development, which staff attended as well. And it was basically a site that was contaminated with volatile organic compounds. It was a former drill site, and they are converting this or developing the site into a four-story apartment complex with 84 units for affordable housing. And one thing I wanted to comment about is that from the developer's perspective, they had nothing but accolades for the hard work that staff had provided and the guidance and oversight for the project and the timeliness of staff making this a priority to get this this project underway in 4 years. And so, yeah, really, really good comments from the community as well. And so I was happy that I was able to be there. And so with that, that's all I have. And so we'll move on to item number 5, which is the executive officer's report. Ms. Arredondo.
Thank you, Chair. I do have 3 updates. The Chiquita Canyon landfill. On June 6th, staff issued a letter denying approval of a construction quality assurance report for Cell 8B of the Chiquita Canyon landfill. Cell 8B is a waste containment area located in the southern margin of the main canyon area of the landfill. As I previously reported in my executive officer's report, the landfill has been experiencing subsurface smoldering reaction in the northwest portion of the main canyon since approximately May of 2022. With the denial of the construction report, the landfill is not allowed to place waste in Cell 8B. Staff issued the denial because stability reports show that conditions at the landfill have changed due to the reaction. Staff believes that no waste should be placed in Cell 8B until uncertainties about the impact of the reaction on overall slope stability in the landfill are resolved. The denial does not preclude the landfill from submitting a revised stability analysis to resolve the uncertainty. The landfill is currently placing waste in Cell 8A adjacent to Cell 8B. Bayona Wetlands Restoration. Staff in the TMDL and Wetland and Riparian Protection Unit continue to coordinate with other agencies concerning the Bayona Creek Wetland Sediment and Invasive Exotic Vegetation TMDL and the proposed Bayona Wetland Restoration. Further action by the Los Angeles Water Board is dependent on completion of a revised Environmental Impact Report, EIR. On June 20th, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, the lead agency for the project, gave a presentation to the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission on the status of the project and the revised EIR. As background, a Los Angeles County Superior Court judge issued a ruling on litigation over the original EIR for the project in May of 2023. In this decision, the department is required to disclose and analyze new flood control design parameters and commit to additional environmental review and performance criteria change. The department decertified the EIR on September 28th of 2023 and is now proceeding to revise the document per the court order. The department hopes to have a draft revised EIR available for public comment by spring of 2025. And depending on public input received on the draft revised EIR, a recertified EIR by the end of 2025, and a reapproved project. Barring further litigation and depending on available funding, the department hopes to implement initial project sequences in 2026. Supplemental environmental projects update. In 2006, the Water Board and LA Waterkeepers entered into a $2.5 million settlement agreement with sanitation districts of Los Angeles County, resolving sanitation sewer overflows that occurred between 2001 and 2006. The settlement called for the districts to contribute $2.375 million to three supplemental environmental projects, or SEPs. My update today is on the final SEP, known as the River Park SEP, totaling $2 million. The River Park SEP is located within the larger San Gabriel River Park, formerly known as the Duck Farm River Park. The San Gabriel River Park, a 30-plus acre former commercial agricultural duck farm property, is being transformed into a water conservation nature park and a visitor center along the San Gabriel River. The development of the San Gabriel River Park will help offset severe shortages of parkland locally and regionally in the surrounding communities. The River Park SEP portion will include 6-plus acres of habitat enhancement and demonstration gardens around the future San Gabriel River Center. The River Park SEP will also include stormwater low-impact development elements to reduce stormwater runoff and improve on-site water retention, therefore reducing water pollution. To date, SEP funds have been used to design portions of the overall project, acquire permits, and habitat enhancement. We'll update the board when additional SEP funds are utilized to complete the final elements of the River Park SEPs, which will be completed March 1st of 2025. Multiple funding sources are being used, and with the aid of SEP funds to help complete the habitat restoration, the San Gabriel River Park opened to the public June 8th of 2024. This completes my report. If there's any questions.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions? No questions? Okay. Yeah, thank you for the thorough report. And so we are going to move on to our next agenda item, which is our public forum. And so again, each speaker will have 3 minutes to address the board unless it's additional time.
Excuse me, Chair. Yes. Next item would be an update from State Water Board member Laurel Firestone.
Yeah, my apologies. Okay. Yes, let us move to State Water Board. Board member Laurel Firestone, yeah, I apologize for skipping you there.
No problem. Good to see you all. And it was great to see you briefly at the chair's meeting. I have a number of updates on things going on. We had a workshop and update from SACWIS, which is the joint committee that an interagency committee that makes recommendations, particularly related to once through cooling needs. And so they are not recommending any extensions on once through cooling beyond what was already done. So that is good. We also held a hearing on municipal stormwater cost policy and received comments on that. We're hoping to finally finalize a more standardized cost reporting framework later this year, and that was something that there's been a huge amount of beta testing and input that has really helped the process. So that's moving forward. We have an annual process around fee setting. That a number of stakeholder meetings have taken place this month to go through those for everything from water quality, water rights, drinking water, ELAP, to update the annual fees. And we held a workshop on the Salton Sea, which we do annually. Sort of big news in terms of things upcoming. We've posted now an additional. We circulated revised regulatory text on our conservation and efficiency regulations, and then the revised regulatory text was first circulated May 20th, and then additional changes were just circulated June 14th. Those are open for public comment and are due July 1st, and we are scheduled for consideration of adoption of final regs on July 3rd. So really coming up. We have a one-year deadline we're trying to meet, which is why we're having to do it on July 3rd, even though I know that's not ideal for folks trying to take vacation. But that is a long time coming, and it's coming up quick. We have also just released our, we held a SAFER advisory group in May. We have another one coming up, but our SAFER program just released our 2024 SAFER drinking water needs assessment. And this marks about the 5-year point for when SAFER began. That'll technically be in August, but this is a good time to sort of take stock of what we've done in the first 5 years. The SAFER program and the legislation that really kicked off the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund is actually a 10-year program, so it sunsets. We're about halfway through that. Hopefully that will get renewed, but it's a really good time for reflecting on the things that we've done over the first 5 years. Over the first 5 years since the development of the program, 251 failing water systems have returned to compliance with drinking water standards. That is benefiting over 2 million people. There's been a 43% drop in those lacking access to safe drinking water. One of the big, as we bring systems into compliance, new systems begin to fail. And so we still have, we still have Californians without safe drinking water. And one of the things we're looking to do in the coming year is really focus on refining our goals and focus, particularly to get those systems that are most entrenched and really, came in 2019 without safe drinking water, to really get those to a place where they finally have safe drinking water from their tap. Unfortunately, those, are, because they've been so entrenched, have been some of the most challenging to get safe drinking water. We have a cost estimate and a gap analysis in our needs assessment. And
excuse me, there is somebody who is unmuted and it's causing background noise. Thank you.
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, that's helpful. We have, so overall, the report estimates that between failing water systems and at-risk public water systems would require over $6.6 billion over the next 5 years to provide safe drinking water, and high-risk state smalls and domestic wells would need an additional $4.9 billion. So this is a lot of money. But it's also it's money that would be filled by a combination of state, federal, and primarily local funds, frankly, in terms of looking at what's available and what's not. And in the meantime, what we are focused on is looking at the using this to really target the assistance that we have, both in the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund and our fund expenditure plan, but also for our state revolving fund intended use plan. We just posted drafts of both of those, the intended use plan for the SRF, as well as our fund expenditure plan. For the drinking water SRF, that includes not only grants, but also all of our drinking water loan programs, including federal bill funds for things like emerging contaminants like PFAS. So it's broader than just the SAFER program. We have a board workshop planned for both the drinking water SRF and the fund expenditure plan July 16th. And written comments on that are due July 24th, and the meeting that we're planning on doing adoption on August 20th. We also related to funding.
También necesitamos relacionando.
Yes, could we mute the speaker, please? Thank you. Please go ahead. Yes, Board Member okay. Firestone, please
yep,
go ahead.
No, you can hear us.
Yes.
Thank you. Just a little bit more clean water SRF, which is our loan and grant program for clean water programs. So that includes wastewater treatment, water recycling, stormwater. We have a workshop coming up on July 2nd, and the draft intended use plan was posted on June 17th. The deadline to submit comments is July 17th, and we're looking to adopt on August 6th. That one, there's some good news in that we were had been projecting previously that we might have not have funding for this year because we front-loaded trying to get projects funded, but we are going to be recommending and do have funding for new projects, which would add, we'd be proposing to include rollover projects and add 14 new projects to the fundable list. There'd still be a maximum that we're staff are proposing for a $50 million maximum loan. So this would be for the loan program, and then we'd still have some grant funding. I will say on both the loan and the grant funding, especially for clean water SRF, there is a far greater need and demand in applications than actual funding. And so that continues to be something that, we're hopeful that we're able to, whether it's through federal funding or bonds or other future funding options, that we're able to continue to grow to support things like recycled water, stormwater, wastewater treatment, upgrades, and really critical things like that. So those are the things I wanted to update. Happy to answer any questions.
Yes, thank you for those updates. And before I turn to my board members, I was just wondering if you could comment on the state budget, the current state budget, and some of the other programs that may be affected.
Yeah, we're still working through that. We did a big push. We still haven't finished the fiscal year, but because of the state budget, we were having to pull back a number of funds, and that includes some of the general fund for PFAS and for recycled water. There's some details in the budget that we're still trying to get some clearer pictures on. But overall, I would say the biggest impact for us is funding for the clean water and, or I guess not clean water, the recycled water specifically, and PFAS funding are two that were particularly pulled back. And I know for the LA region, both of those are really critical. And I can provide a better update, a sort of more complete update at the next update.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Board Member Christensen, any questions?
I do have one question. You mentioned, besides the state revolving fund, that federal funds might also be used. Have those funds been identified, or is this a case where we're hoping additional legislation is passed and appropriated?
I guess by that, I was thinking about the bipartisan infrastructure legislate law that bill funding had a particularly large amount for PFAS and emerging contaminants, which we're hoping fills that gap with some of the PFAS funding at the state level that we had to pull back. But no, there's not a particular new. In fact, I think a lot of the looking at the federal budgets that are being proposed and considered, if anything, that looks like there would be cuts to our base grants for SRF, and we're looking there. I know there's bills being discussed around low-income ratepayer assistance programs, for example, at the federal level, but. We're I think far from where we need to be in terms of finding funding to support all the infrastructure projects within the water sector that are really going to be needed over the next few years, not just for SAFER, but for all of the water supply resiliency work.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, thank you so much.
Yes, Board Member Mendez.
Yes. Sorry. Good morning. Nice to see you. Thank you for the update. And you may have said it, I might have missed it. Is there any traction on the various climate and environmental bonds that there were in discussions in legislature, and any opportunity for the regional boards and the state board?
That is still being negotiated.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Vice Chair Nahai.
Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you. You know, every time you give your report, it's always so comprehensive and thorough, and I know it takes time to prepare for it, and so just want to express appreciation for all of the work that you do in preparing these presentations for us. So I have two questions. First of all, just want to make sure that I heard correctly. So on OTC, did you say that the decision has been made that there will be no further OTC extensions?
That's the recommendation for the State Water Board, is that we were, and by that I mean there's no recommendation from the joint agencies to request any amendments to what we adopted last year. So that means, that doesn't mean forever in the future, that means currently there's no new recommendation to do an extension for this year.
All right. Okay. And then you said the obvious, which is that for this region, recycled water and PFAS are truly significant matters. So, and then you said, well, the funding has been pulled back. Is that final? Is there the possibility of some hope that that funding will be restored, or do we have finality there?
Yeah, I think those two seem clear. That so there's some nuance. The PFAS funding and emerging contaminant funding, what was pulled back was there was some state general fund that got pulled back because of our huge state general fund deficit. And however, we have a lot of federal funding coming or available. And so what we're trying to do right now is move any of the projects that were on track for state funding to be able to still receive funding, but it would be through the federal funds. So that there's at least that option. I know I've met a number of times with WRD, the Water Replenishment District here in LA, and it's they've been really working with pumpers in the region to try to help access funding, and there is a real challenge with meeting changing from state funds to federal funds, so that won't work for everyone because there's additional federal cross-cutters that projects need. But overall, there is an option for those projects in ways that I think for recycled water, we still have, and in our clean water SRF, we are, again, making recommendations of additional projects to fund, including recycled water projects. But there was general fund funding that got pulled back to fill the gap that had been dedicated to recycled water that I know people are hopeful that maybe the climate bond might have some funds in it, but I think it's clear that the need for funding for recycled water is greater than what is currently available. And I know that's a priority for this administration and the state, certainly in terms of all of our goals and water supply resiliency and all of the multiple benefits. So I think that's still a work in progress.
Thank you.
But those cuts are happening. Those are final.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And again, I also agree with the comments. Thank you for your thorough report. And next time, I will not miss you on the agenda for sure. Okay. So thank you again, Board Member Firestone.
Thanks.
And so now we will move on to public forum. And again, each speaker will have 3 minutes to address the board unless additional time was approved in advance. And so I want to move on to our first public speaker is Madeline Glickfield, who was the former LA Regional Water Quality Control Board Chair, and she has 10 minutes.
This is on. Is that right? This is Madeline Glickfield. I reside at 28907 Gray Fox Street in Malibu. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak today, Chairman Camacho and members of the board. I was a member up to 2018, and that's a long time ago now. And I don't assume I know much about the way that the board handles MS4 permits now. But I'm here to talk about what I do know about, which is the county's Measure W proposition, which is now known as the Safe Water Program, where the chair is representing this board. And it's just to point out, as you know, you're looking toward implementation and always monitoring it. This is the main way that Los Angeles cities and the county gets grants for capital funds to build projects and grants to maintain the projects. I have been a member of the North Santa Monica Bay Watershed Stakeholder Committee since its inception in 2019, so I haven't forgotten about the MS4. I'm just doing this in a little bit different way. I'm here to talk about how the Safe and Clean Water Program improves water quality. When I say I mean me, but in reference to my situation is on the Santa Monica Bay. And that area includes the Santa Monica Mountains and coast, the Conejo Valley, and the Simi Hills to the county boundary. The watershed is one of the biggest and most different watersheds in the county. It also has the smallest amount of funding. because most of it is public land, and public lands don't pay a stormwater assessment. So that gives us comparatively little money to work with on an annual basis, but money is not the only problem we have. It is not even the biggest problem we have. It's spending what money we have to do projects. The first important points that I want to make, the points I want to make, is that water quality is in that program among other co-equal goals, whereas in the MS4, it is the goal, along with having some other beneficial aspects. So it's quite different. The second point that I need to make is that, as far as I understand now, we've been looking at this in our WASC, that new watershed planning and planning that we use to strategically locate projects to do the most good, we don't have good watershed, good monitoring data, water quality monitoring data to locate those hot spots where we should put these plants. We know where the water flows are, but we don't, because of the way the monitoring program is structured, we don't really have that kind of data in the monitoring program now. I wanted you and the staff to be aware that this is a problem, that there is really no other multi-year continuing monitoring program to deal with this issue. There's some very good programs in water, in wetlands, but they are basically about biological monitoring, monitoring the health of the system and the species in the system, but not public health, and that I think is a big concern. So the criteria, I want to make sure you understood what we went through for the grants, were based on equal amounts of value for the water quality and the water supply points that each project gets. And that means that there has to be a minimum threshold of points. And if you don't have both of them, you're probably not going to qualify for a grant at all. Well, the Santa Monica Mountains is the perfect stereotype of the place that doesn't qualify for both in terms of the volumes of water that they expected for water supply. We have steep mountains. We have millions of little hydrological watersheds. We have basins. We have no water. In most of the mountains, we have subterranean streams that flow to the ocean, no groundwater basins. The big basis for all the eWIMPs was having some place where water could go down to store in the groundwater and then be used again. We have very little of that, and that we do have is full of arsenic, natural arsenic. So we had to figure out what we could do on water supply with built systems. We couldn't build anything big enough to meet the criteria. So for 3 years, we didn't have any projects at all. This is the first year, in 2024, that we have now sent a project through to the Regional Oversight Committee that meets all of the criteria. And the only reason we were able to do that is that the county decided to reduce the amount of water supply required, basically looking at the fact that we were stuck. We couldn't do it. So that is really good news. But we also don't have enough points for the other things we do, like community benefits, recreational land and flood management, which are natural things that we could do, and ecological restoration. There's no points for that. So we're a misfit in the program. So I think that this happened, and I think many of you already know this, because people didn't understand when they were voting on this, like, why am I paying for the amount of rain that falls on my property? And I don't understand that. So they wanted to get something that people could relate to and that met other goals, and that's when water supply became a co-equal goal and disadvantaged communities became a co-equal goal. Not co-equal, but a very important goal. So priorities shifted into those areas. And I am concerned that we won't optimize projects for the best location for water quality as we make these kind of trade-offs. So it's something for you to observe. I'm not sure there's much you can do about it. So I think after 3 years of working to modify these equipment, we do have these modified things. So here's our next challenge. Look, identifying locations where grantees could treat the biggest flows of water, which are also pollution hotspots, was our objective, because we didn't have enough money. We had to find the best places to capture the most water and to divert, treat, and either discharge water or recycle it. We had to find a few good places to put these things, because that's all the money we would have to invest in them. And in fact, those kinds of projects required a fairly hefty maintenance program, which eventually could take all of our money. So here, the problem is we got a presentation from the two EWIMP SIM consultants in our mountains, and we were told that there were not enough data monitoring points in the EWIMP monitoring plans to identify hotspots, and that monitoring locations were not even necessarily in the right place for this. They were set up for compliance purposes, not for optimizing location of projects. So we are now in a position where we're modifying watershed plans to accommodate these other goals, find better locations for things for all these goals. And we need data to include for water quality. And without data, by default, water quality will get a lower amount of attention. And I'm coming to you because I think there needs to be some awareness of this, and how you resolve it, I'm not sure. But I would discourage you from changing your monitoring program now. It has a multi-year value. You've got so much invested in it. Adding to it, unless you get some manna from heaven, is going to be incredibly expensive. This board cut the number of monitoring sites from 400 that we put in, because it was just too expensive. So adding them back would be hard as well. But the question is, what we're left with is doing what we did 25 years ago, which is do land use models and figure out how land use is associated with pollutants. And it's not perfect in any way, nor is that meant to do actual site locations. So I bring you this problem. We're struggling with it. The chair in representing the board is struggling with it. The staff should know about this, and I hope that you'll be able to pay attention to it and illuminate this process. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gleckfield. And also, I think that you make some very, very good points, and these are things that the Safe Clean Water Program is struggling with and working through. And there is an admission that it's not a one-size-fits-all for all of the watershed areas. And so trying to judge the projects using this, the three-legged stool equally amongst each of the watersheds is not going to particularly be a good outcome, because there are opportunities in some watersheds, more opportunities than others, but there is still the need. And so the planning process that I had talked about in my remarks earlier is going to take a hard look at that. And there has been some discussions on whether a continual grant process, to the extent that it has been done, is still appropriate. And should there not be a watershed plan very specific and projects identified and just funded once the watershed, the WASC committee members agree to a certain focus within the watersheds. And so those discussions are happening right now. And definitely you have some really good ideas, so you should be part of that discussion as well.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank Ms. Gleckfield for coming here, and also for her many, many years of service and leadership in the water sector in so many different roles. And so, as always, I can't see you right now because you're behind the podium. There you are. But just want to say how much I've appreciated your work, your leadership, your tireless efforts, all decent and all for the good of our region. So thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Board Member Mendez.
Yes, I also like to reiterate those comments. It's a pleasure to finally meet you in person. I know we've been corresponding over the last couple year or two online forums and through our various colleagues at UCLA Luskin School. So I thank you for your continued leadership, and we hope to hear more from you over the coming years in various different capacities now.
Okay, thank you very much for your comments. And I'm going to move to Ray Tahir, representing TESE Environmental, and you have 3 minutes.
Morning, everyone. Ali. Yeah. Yay. Okay. Next slide, please. And this is about the board's obligations under the Bagley-Keene Act. This law specifically provides that a state agency may not prohibit public criticism of its policies, programs, or services, or of the acts or omissions of the agency. At the board's April 25th meeting, board member Ashtian violated this law by informing me that my comments to legal counsel Nunez during public forum were inappropriate. Ms. Ashtian took exception to my calling Ms. Nunez annoying, and this is because for several years she and other board counsel claimed that ex parte communication regarding an adjudicative matter is only allowed at public hearings or workshops. For several years, I explained during public forum that as long as the communication to a board member was disclosed to other board members, such communication is allowed. Ms. Nunez and her colleagues, and that includes Austin and Fortas, disagreed. And this is not, by the way, this is not the council's fault. It was the Office of Chief Counsel Laufer who wrote the incorrect ex parte guidelines, but unfortunately, Ms. Nunez had to take the heat for it. Interestingly, Board Member Nahai said he had received a call from BizFed regarding the CII permit, which is an adjudicative proceeding, or matter rather. Because the communication was disclosed to other board members, ex parte communication was not violated. This proved what I had been saying all along. Such communication is not restricted to adjudicative proceedings or workshops. This is why I call Ms. Nunez annoying. The deliberate misinterpretation of ex parte communication, by the way, was consequential. This is especially true during the 2021 MS4 permit discussions. The public could not send letters or emails to each board member commenting on the permit issues. The public was limited to 3 minutes at the podium. This resulted in a number of problems with the permit, including conflicting and unlawful requirements. Board Member Mendez was even afraid to open any of his emails for fear of violating ex parte communication. Thus, my criticism of Ms. Nunez was warranted and is allowed under Bagley-Keene. And I have the right to be critical of the state's agency's policies, and in this case, the board's flagrant omission of what is actually required under ex parte communication. What riled Ms. Ashton is an email I informed her not to intervene, because the next time I will forcefully but politely ask her to stay in her lane. I meant that I would inform her, in public on Bagley-Keene and its consequences for failing to comply, which says, each member of a state body who attends a meeting of such body in violation of any provision of this article, and where the member intends to deprive the public of information to which the member knows or has reason to know the public is entitled, is guilty of a misdemeanor. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tahir. Our next speaker is Marcy Winter. I believe she is online representing the Agua Dulce Neighbors, and she has 3 minutes.
Hello, thank you so much for allowing me to comment today. My comments are in regard to item 2 on the closed session agenda that that is on the, today's agenda. I'm a party to this petition. It's the one about the Agua Dulce Bay residential development project in LA County. Again, I am a party to this petition. We let you know in our previous petition that this developer could not be trusted. Now they can find over $300,000 for the state.
This is counsel to the board, Stephanie Yu. So it sounds like you're speaking about an enforcement action, and I'm so sorry to completely interject there, but if are you speaking about the petition or an enforcement action?
I'm speaking in regards to the petition, and I just have some comments about, you know, what's happening currently for the board to regard when they're talking about our petition later today.
Okay. So to the extent that you are speaking about an enforcement action, I believe that there is one that's pending, and because it's pending, we're not allowed to have comments about that during
the public forum.
Right, but there are prohibitions about speaking about ongoing enforcement actions. Because it's an adjudicative matter, and it's something where there's a prosecution party and a respondent to that particular action. It's pending before the board, and we unfortunately cannot take public comment on enforcement actions. If you're talking about a procedural matter, we do have an attorney from the Office of Enforcement that's on the line that can speak to procedural matters related to the enforcement. I can address some
if it would be okay, I apologize for interrupting. I can skip past that. This is about you guys are talking about the petition later
okay.
on during your closed session, and I just have some comments about what is going on there. I just mentioned the fine as part of my overall comment. It's not I really don't have anything specific. I just want to make sure that everyone is aware of some of the things that are occurring up there.
Okay. I don't think the board is going to be discussing the petition during closed session, but and I also believe that the petition may have been dismissed by operation of law with the state board, but I would advise you to confirm that with the state water board directly.
I got no information regarding it being dismissed at all.
Right. It happens by operation of law after a certain amount of time has passed without an action by the State Water Board.
So but our petition just disappears. Our grievances are unimportant.
Well, that's not...
You guys didn't talk about it?
That's not my decision to make. It's actually a petition before the State Water Board. So if you would like to clarify it with them... That's what I would advise you to do, but it's the position of the LA Water Board that the petition has been dismissed by operation of law.
Why weren't we notified? I'm a party to the petition. Why did I receive nothing? I didn't even receive notification of this meeting that our petition was on the agenda. Our petition is on the agenda.
Ms. Winter, if I could interject, this is Norma Camacho, the chair. I think you have a lot of questions, and so we will connect you with staff to assist you in answering those questions, and they will also assist you with some state contacts as well. And I just want to let you know that your concerns are not unimportant to us here.
I appreciate you saying that. The actions just don't really follow up with that. I would love the opportunity speak to someone about what's going on with our petition.
Okay, and we will do that. Yes, staff is shaking their heads that they will. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay. Will someone contact me separately?
Yes, Jenny Newman will be contacting you. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, and thank you very much for... showing up today.
Thank you.
And we are going to go to our next virtual speaker, and that is Mr. Walter Lamb. If we could bring him up.
Hi.
Hello.
Good morning, board members. Thank you. Walter Lamb, representing the Bonnie Wetlands Land Trust. And I'll start by apologizing that I was a little bit late for this morning's meeting, so I did not hear the executive officer's report, but I did read the written report. And it indicated that staff's position is that you are not able to take any action on the Biona wetlands until such time as the Department of Fish and Wildlife recertifies or certifies as a revised EIR and then submits an application. And I think the problem there is, as a regulatory agency, you've essentially sidelined yourselves such that, you know, if it takes 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, all you can do is wait. And I don't think that's within the spirit or the law of a regulatory agency. I think, you know, you do have the authority, as we've been talking about for a long time now, to set up an implementation plan and schedule so that at least the public, everyone's on the same page. And again, I don't know if this was brought up during the verbal comments by the executive director of staff, but there was just a meeting last week, a week ago today, at the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, in which this topic was discussed, you know, in a fair amount of detail. And essentially, you know, what everyone learned is that there is no schedule, right? So the timing for implementation of the project and therefore implementation of the TMDLs is unknown. And there are issues with finding funding. There are issues with, you know, the number of permits that's, you know, still not a single permit has actually been obtained over the last 20 years. And so, again, I don't mean to be redundant. You know, I think all of us want to kind of move on, get some progress, and, you know, not just keep going in circles. But it does seem like there's no plan right now by staff to, you know, to move anything forward, right? It's just only to wait and to wait and to wait. And, you know, to go back to board member Nahai's comments from November of 2022, it's getting to be a long time ago, right? Trying to understand, you know, where is the light at the end of the tunnel? You know, is this ever going to happen? I think you do have the authority to request more information, and if it looks like the existing plan is not viable, you do have the authority to, you know, enforce another plan. And so one of the things that came up at the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission meeting was the idea of, you know, the presenter said that they would restore the site acre by acre if necessary, and that's actually not unrealistic. Yes, it is a big reserve, but it's been 20 years that we've not been restoring acre by acre, and had we been doing so, you know, one of the issues of the legacy exotic invasive vegetation, we'd be very far along. And so what we don't want to do is wait another 20 years. So again, I just want to say, you know, eventually we'll need to take some action on this, but for now I'm still hoping that we can get somebody to speak up and actually get, you know, that plan filled in a little bit better. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lamb. And I just wanted to turn to staff to ask if there is any possibility of us trying to do anything separate, even if it may be small, to continue to push this process, this restoration process forward.
I can respond to that, Chair Camacho. This is Jenny Newman. And I was at the meeting last week for the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission. I'm an alternate commissioner. And so we did hear about the plan moving forward. And as a staff member of the LA Water Board, I was satisfied with the progress, understanding that it's been held up by litigation. But they are moving forward as quickly as possible, given the constraints. And everybody wants us to move forward as quickly as possible. But the restoration plan currently, you know, being proposed by the Department of Fish and Wildlife is the plan to implement our TMDL, and we will do everything we can to help it move forward as fast as possible. At this time, we don't see the need for any additional order from the Water Board to compel the Department of Fish and Wildlife or any other agency to do anything different, because we think they are doing all that they can in the face of the constraints.
Okay. Vice Chair Nahai.
So perhaps a question for the lawyers. Where do we stand with respect to litigation? It, you know, litigation at some point reaches an end point, and we keep, you know, I understand that there's necessarily paralysis, a certain amount of it, when something's in litigation, but But are we monitoring what is happening with respect to the litigation? Are we seeing any, what are the dates from the court as to when some kind of result may be forthcoming? And if we don't have those answers today, that's fine. Maybe at the next board meeting we can get a. I mean, I don't want to put anybody on the spot if we don't have adequate information.
We do. It is not our litigation, so you are looking at our lawyers. It's litigation between the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the litigants.
Oh, I know that.
But we are tracking it, and that was part of executive officer's report. The EIR was decertified in fall 2023. The Department of Fish and Wildlife re-noticed a revised EIR that addressed the court's direction on those two issues of flood control and performance measures. And then what has happened is that, as Fish and Wildlife explained in their update to the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission last week, is that now they need more time to respond to comments and to finalize the revised EIR because they are running out of funding because of the length of time. So they plan to release a revised final EIR in spring 2025, so roughly a year from now or less, and then have a recertified project to move forward in mid to late 2025 so that they can begin work in 2026. So that we are tracking it, and that is the status. We can follow up to find out, like, to speculate what will happen once the revised EIR is finalized, what potential legal risks there are or litigation threats. We can follow up on that and provide you our summary. I'll work with our attorneys to get that for you.
Yeah, and to clarify, I know that we're not parties to it. That's why I said maybe this is a question for the lawyers, not our lawyers.
Yeah.
But thank you for that. But then, again, I know that we don't have a crystal ball, but when the EIR is then represented, we'll put it that way, by Fish and Wildlife, might there then at that point be another challenge to it? And then additional delays in the process, or again, I don't know where to turn my head, but again, regarding just the legal process, can we have confidence that at that point work can proceed, or is it possible, just in the litigation process, that there may be further challenges even when the EIR is recertified? And
yes. We can do that, and Amelia Carter, who's our attorney for the 401 program and this project, we will talk to the attorneys for Fish and Wildlife and get back to you with a report on that.
Yeah, just let us know what the process is, mm-hmm. You know? Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, so in that case, I think Mr. Lam can also save some time without coming to us every other month and saying what's happening. So. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jenny.
Yeah. Thank you, staff, for the response, and also thank you, Mr. Lam, for your comment. And we do have another virtual commenter, and that's a representative for RTG Investments, and you have 3 minutes, and if we could have the name of the person representing RTG Investments so we could unmute them. You were not able to locate them?
They're online, Chair. Yeah, but they're not unmuted.
Yes, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
No, still muted.
Okay, and so maybe we might be able to come back to that if possible, and maybe if RTG Investments could send us a comment to see whether or not they still want to make a comment during this public comment period. Okay. Yeah, so we'll continue on. Hello?
Can you hear us?
Yes. Yes, I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, so please go ahead and identify yourself. Now you're muted again. So if you could keep yourself unmuted, that would be great. Okay. Yeah, we will come back to this since the party cannot keep themselves unmuted. So we are going to move on to the uncontested items. Well, let me just make one last call. Are there any other virtual commenters? No, there's no other requests. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to the uncontested items, and we will come back to RTG investments later on in the meeting. Okay, so we do have item number 8, which is consideration of tentative waste discharge requirements and water reclamation requirements for the Limonera Wastewater Treatment Plant in the city of Santa Paula. And there are no comments. This remains uncontested. And so I'm going to ask for a motion and a second.
I think Mike moved.
Okay. That's Board Member Mendez has the motion. Okay. And Vice Chair Nahai has seconded it. And so let us take a roll call vote.
Chair Camacho.
Yes.
Board Member Christensen.
Yes.
Board Member Mendez.
Yes.
Vice Chair Nahai.
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so we are up to our contested item, which is item number 9. And so I would like to ask us to take 5 minutes for a break before we start. And right now it's 10:08, so let's give ourselves 5 minutes, maybe about like 10:15, 10:20. Let's regroup and reconvene. Thank you very much. And I believe we are recording. And so we will go on to our contested item number 9. And number 9 is consideration of a proposed amendment to the water quality control plan for the Los Angeles region to incorporate a water effects ratio for copper in Marina Del Rey Harbor and to revise the Marina Del Rey Harbor Toxics Pollutants TMDL. And so I will first administer the oath. And so will everyone testifying today on item 9 please stand and take the following oath. Do you promise that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? Please respond, I do or yes. Okay, thank you very much. And so to start out our presentations, I'm going to turn the microphone over to our executive officer, Ms. Arredondo, to introduce staff presentations and make a few comments.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for this time. And before I begin, I wanted, before we move into item 9, I wanted to acknowledge staff and their hard work with engaging with stakeholders, specifically Elijah, who will be presenting here shortly after I speak. Elijah Wakefield is our supervisor for the TMDL and Non-Point Source Unit. And LB9, who is our manager, Dr. Nye, is here as well, and she oversees the regional program section, as well as former staff that are no longer here but also worked on this, June Hsu and Shania Rappaport. These staff worked with County of Los Angeles on an ongoing basis to implement the existing TMDL, to obtain grant money for boaters, and oversee the development of the water effect ratio for copper. Staff also conducted extensive outreach to the boating community by holding workshops and meeting with individual groups, such as the Marina Del Rey Lessees Association. And staff also engaged with environmental organizations early on and throughout the water effect ratio study. This is a controversial issue that could have been much more controversial and contentious if it wasn't for all the outreach staff has done, our current and former staff. Now I'm going to pass it over to Elijah Wakefield, who will be presenting on item 9. Thank you.
Good morning. Item 9 is the reconsideration of the Marina Del Rey Harbor Toxic Pollutants Total Maximum Daily Load. Toxic pollutants refers to chlordane, copper, lead, zinc, PCBs, DDT, and sediment toxicity. This is the second revision of the TMDL and is narrowly focused on the components of the TMDL addressing the dissolved copper impairment of the water column. Before I get into the presentation, I wanted to note there is a change sheet which all board members should have. It was uploaded to your SharePoint yesterday, and copies are also on the table with the agenda for those who are interested. The changes are all in the staff report, not in either of the basin plan amendments or the resolution. In today's presentation, I'll review the regulatory history of the TMDL and go into some detail on why we undertook this reconsideration. Then we'll move to the site-specific study that has been conducted for Marina Del Rey Harbor and the changes we propose in response to that study. The presentation will then look at the major comments received and recommendations. Next slide, please. On screen, we have a map of Marina Del Rey Harbor and the associated watershed, which is the beige area surrounding the harbor. The Marina Del Rey Harbor watershed is just under 3 square miles, but it surrounds the largest artificial small craft harbor in the United States. The marina was developed in the 1960s on the site of a coastal wetlands complex. The area is highly developed with mixed residential and retail commercial uses dominating. The harbor consists of a main channel and a branch series of basins. The design of the harbor provides protection from the open ocean, but that protection limits natural flushing in the harbor, which contributes to several long outstanding environmental issues. Next slide, please. There have been 3 major regulatory events specifically related to the Marina Del Rey Harbor Toxics TMDL. First, in 1996, Marina Del Rey Harbor was identified as a polluted water body under the Federal Clean Water Act, placing it on the 303D list. As with any 303D listing, this required that the water body pollutant combination be addressed by the US EPA or the state through a TMDL or other method. In 2005, the Los Angeles Water Board adopted a TMDL to address impairments of copper, zinc, chlordane, and PCBs in the sediments of the back basins of the harbor. During this process, the data evaluation indicated the possibility of additional impairments in the sediments of other portions of the harbor and in the water column throughout the harbor. Therefore, the 2005 TMDL mandated a reconsideration after additional data was collected. In 2013, enough data had become available to reconsider the TMDL. The data confirmed sediment in all basins to be impaired and confirmed the water column was contaminated with dissolved copper leaching from anti-fouling paints on boats. The 2014 reconsideration updated and expanded the TMDL to address all of these issues. For the copper target in the TMDL, we used the copper objective from the California Toxics Rule, also called CTR. The boating community at the time opposed use of the CTR objective and were concerned about how implementation of the TMDL could affect their use of anti-fouling paints. After a TMDL is adopted by the Los Angeles Water Board, before it is fully in effect, it must be reviewed and approved by both the State Water Board and the US EPA. When the State Water Board reviewed and approved the 2014 TMDL adopted by the Los Angeles Water Board, the State Board included a provision that a site-specific objective for copper might be an appropriate action in the future if stakeholders could develop an alternative numeric target while still protecting beneficial uses. In addition, in a separate action regulating copper and anti-fouling paints, the California Department of Pesticide Regulations also recommended that a copper site-specific objective be considered for Marina Del Rey Harbor. The reconsideration before you today is a water effect ratio specific to Marina Del Rey Harbor to provide that site-specific copper number. This study and proposed revision addresses the water column copper impairment. All other parts of the Marina Del Rey Harbor Toxic Substances Team DL remain in effect and are not changed by the proposal in front of you. Next slide. Before getting into the rest of the details, I wanted to take a moment to discuss the dissolved copper water column impairment. When developing TMDLs, a source and linkage analysis is completed. In many situations, water bodies are determined to be impaired due to a variety of sources of discharges. As part of the process, the responsibility for the discharge is broken out or allocated to different entities. Marina Del Rey Harbor is a little different in that the source of the water column copper impairment was determined to be almost entirely from a single source, which is copper-based anti-fouling paints on boats in the harbor. As I've said, for many stakeholders, in particular those within the boating community, this source assessment and the associated load allocation were the main points of concern with the 2014 reconsideration. There are various copper paints that work in slightly different ways, but in general, these paints are applied to the boats to decrease the quantity and rate of accumulation of algae and invertebrates on boat hulls. When boats are not moving, the paint applied to the hull is intended to be slowly released to the surrounding water, which is a passive process called leaching. The 2014 TMDL reconsideration found that this process accounts for about 94% of the total amount of dissolved copper discharged to the water column of the harbor. These paints, though, aren't 100% effective at stopping fouling, so the boat hulls must also be periodically cleaned. This process usually occurs in the water by divers and was found to account for about 6% of the dissolved copper in the water column. The load allocations for the water column copper impairment, which is from the anti-fouling paint, were allocated to the County of Los Angeles, the individual anchorages, and persons owning boats moored in the marina. Next slide. On screen is the dissolved copper water column data from Marina Del Rey Harbor, and the graph shows the magnitude of the problem. The horizontal lines on the chart are the numeric targets for the TMDL. These are based on the California Toxics Rule, also called CTR, which is a set of water quality criteria adopted by the US EPA for priority toxic pollutants in California. CTR standards are intended to protect human health and the environment. There's a criteria for short-term exposure, shown in as the dashed red line. There's also a criteria for long-term exposure, shown as the dotted red line. The green line down the center divides the data pre and post the 2014 TMDL reconsideration. The US EPA recognizes that the CTR objectives are based on generic conditions and could be more accurate by incorporating site-specific conditions. The CTR, in fact, allows for site-specific objectives to the criteria to reflect the site-specific conditions. Next slide. Once the 2014 Marina Del Rey Harbor Toxics TMDL reconsideration went into effect, the County of Los Angeles requested permission from the Los Angeles Water Board to conduct a study to examine site-specific conditions in Marina Del Rey Harbor. The county produced a justification report indicating why this action was needed and showing a number of implementation practices that were also being pursued to address the impairment. Following approval from the Los Angeles Water Board, Los Angeles County contracted with the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project, or SCWRP, to conduct the scientific study to examine whether the specific chemistry in the marina reduced the toxic effects of copper on marine life. There were additional components to the effort to make sure the results were transparent, scientifically rigorous, and collaborative. One such component was the engagement of a technical advisory committee, or TAC, which consisted of internationally recognized toxicity and aquatic experts. Another component was to engage diverse stakeholders throughout the development and commencement of the project. This stakeholder group included the county, Heal the Bay, Los Angeles Waterkeeper, individual members of the community, and others. Water Board staff actively participated in the process as well. For the Marina Del Rey Harbor project, public participation and feedback from stakeholders was solicited during the work plan development, and the work plan had to be approved by the Los Angeles Water Board prior to commencing. Regular stakeholder meetings were held, and feedback continued to be solicited as the study progressed. There are different ways to develop criteria that reflect site-specific conditions. In the case of Marina Del Rey Harbor, the study design was developed in collaboration with the Technical Advisory Committee, and the effort utilized a method called the water effect ratio. This study followed the US EPA interim guidance on determination and use of water effect ratios for metals. I'll refer to this as the US EPA guidance. Since 1994, the US EPA guidance has been used for developing water effect ratios, or WERs, throughout the country, and is actually based on EPA guidance dating back to the early 1980s. Next slide. The WER methodology involves taking a sample of site water and a sample of known clean reference water, adding a pollutant, in this case copper, to each sample, and quantifying the resulting effects on a sensitive reference species in each water sample. The results of the sample water and the results of the reference water are then compared to calculate a ratio known as the water effect ratio. The US EPA guidance sets out general methods and is intended to provide a path to develop protective targets that account for site-specific conditions that remain protective but also give enough room to accommodate the many different circumstances found throughout the country. That is part of the reason the TAC oversight and stakeholder engagement was so important. The US EPA guidance specifies a minimum of 3 sample events be completed, each resulting in a sample WER. The intent is to gather data from a range of conditions that can be found in a water body. To develop the final ratio to be applied to the water body as a whole, the guidance recommends taking all the sample WERs for the study and determining the geometric mean, resulting in a final WER, or F-WER, as it's called. In the case of the Marina Del Rey WER study, the minimum number of samples was exceeded by successfully completing 6 sampling events incorporating 5 locations, collected during both dry and wet weather, which represent the local seasonal extremes. The 2014 reconsideration had used a model to calculate load capacity and load allocation based on the target and local salinity data. There was a recognition that if the WER was adopted, the model would need to be rerun. Therefore, in parallel with the WER study, the county also undertook an additional water collection effort between 2018 and 2020, collecting salinity data. The availability of this data provides an opportunity to further update the model to more accurately reflect the current conditions in Marina Del Rey Harbor. In August 2021, the Los Angeles County Department of Public Works and Department of Beaches and Harbors submitted the results of the WER study and requested a reconsideration of the TMDL to include the proposed site-specific objective and a TMDL schedule extension. Next slide. As I mentioned with the previous slide, the last step of the study was to calculate a final WER. While it was expected that the study would include one F-WER that more definitively included site conditions and that could then be reviewed by the Los Angeles Water Board, the TAC actually recommended 2 WERs. The first was a WER equal to 1.4 and was calculated through the use of a straight geometric mean. It was derived using the guidance methodology, followed the work plan, and had been used in other peer-reviewed studies. However, it didn't put any additional emphasis on samples collected in dry weather. The second WER, equal to 1.32, was calculated through a weather-weighted geometric mean. The other WER adds a little more emphasis on the results of samples collected during dry weather, which is most characteristic of local conditions. The TAC indicated that 2 of the 3 members preferred this calculation method. However, it was noted the study was not originally designed to be weather-weighted. Ultimately, while the ratios are different, they're actually very close. The inclusion of both WERs in the final report reflected the fact that both WERs were scientifically valid and protective of aquatic life, and that the choice between them was a regulatory decision rather than a scientific one. The county, in their submittal, requested that the straight geometric mean derived WER of 1.4 be adopted. Staff evaluated the 2 WERs proposed within the historical and present context of the TMDL, including how the TMDL would be implemented. In the TMDL documents released for public comment in April 2024, staff originally recommended the geometric mean derived WEIR of 1.4 be adopted as a basin plan amendment and the WEIR be applied to the numeric target as a TMDL revision. However, following the review and in response to public comments, in particular those from a consortium and environmental advocates, including Gilda Bay and Los Angeles Waterkeeper, staff updated the recommendation to adopt the weather-weighted WEIR of 1.32 and revise the TMDL based on that WEIR. Next slide. Since the adoption of the 2014 TMDL, other efforts to address the water column copper impairment have occurred as well. The County of Los Angeles has conducted a number of actions to aid in addressing the copper impairments in the harbor. The county has undertaken several pilot paint studies. These studies converted county-owned boats to available non-biocide paints and then followed paint performance and cleaning to evaluate fouling rates and paint conditions. The end goal is to help identify anti-fouling paints that are effective in Marina Del Rey Harbor without contributing to the copper impairment, while also raising public awareness and adoption of such paints. These efforts are ongoing. While most of the water column impairment is due to the passive leaching of copper from boats in the marina, some of it does come from in-water hull cleaning activities. In 2018, the county adopted an in-water hull cleaning ordinance requiring commercial and private hull cleaners to use best management practices. They've also developed a BMP training and certification program for hull cleaners, which will aid in the enforcement of the ordinance. The county has worked to promote awareness and boater participation in reducing copper inputs from anti-fouling paint, including developing and distributing materials to boaters on available actions boaters can take to reduce their impacts. Efforts to address water column copper concentrations are not restricted to just local efforts. The California Department of Pesticide Regulation has been involved in the efforts to reduce copper impacts to harbor waters. DPR is the agency responsible for regulating pesticides, and copper anti-fouling paints fall under this category. In 2014, DPR reduced the maximum copper leach rate for anti-fouling paints to equal 9.5 micrograms per centimeter squared per day, with the change to take effect July 1st, 2018, and all current stock of higher leach paints discontinued by June 30th, 2020. In the memo specifying the updated rate, DPR noted this would not be low enough to fully protect larger marinas such as Marina Del Rey Harbor. Next slide. The major changes proposed for the current reconsideration of the Marina Del Rey Harbor Toxic Substances TMDL are on screen. These changes include updating the basin plan to establish the WEIR and also updating the basin plan to adjust numeric targets based on the WEIR. This would include updating Chapter 3 of the basin plan to establish a copper WEIR for Marina Del Rey Harbor and updating Chapter 7 to revise the Marina Del Rey Harbor Toxic Substances TMDL. As stated early in the presentation, most of the 2014 TMDL will remain the same. The current reconsideration is only focused on the part of the TMDL addressing the dissolved copper impairments to the water column. The reconsideration also proposes updating the load calculation and load allocations based on the expanded salinity data collected during the WEIR study and the adjusted numeric targets. TMDLs developed by the state of California must have an implementation component and schedule. The final major proposed change is an extension of this implementation schedule for addressing copper in the harbor. A 2-year extension is proposed to allow for the development of a regulatory mechanism to address the water column copper impairment. Next slide. Draft documents showing the proposed basin plan amendments and the revisions to the TMDL were posted on April 2, 2024, and the public comment period ended on May 16, 2024. 17 different sets of comments were received, and as with most TMDL-related items brought to the board, they contained a mix of support for and objections to the proposed changes. Looking at the comments as a whole, the most common comments were focused on which WEIR is more appropriate to include in regulatory efforts and the proposed extension of the implementation schedule. Next slide. Several comment letters from environmental advocates opposed the adoption of the WEIR equal to 1.4 and actively requested the weather-weighted WEIR of 1.32 be adopted. According to commenters, the weather-weighted ratio was seen as being more protective of aquatic life and more reflective of environmental conditions. As mentioned in earlier slides, the TAC recommended both WEIRs be included in the WEIR study report because both ratios, having been derived based on the U.S. EPA guidance, were protective of aquatic life. Also noted earlier, the documents originally released for public comment included the geometric mean derived WEIR of 1.4 instead of weather-weighted WEIR of 1.32. There were many reasons for this, as laid out in the staff report in the response to comments. However, in light of the requests that came in during the public comment period, staff re-examined the record of the WEIR study, including stakeholder participation and concerns, and re-evaluated this regulatory-based decision. Staff also reviewed past regional WEIR adoption actions. In the program notes for the WEIR study, Heal the Bay and Los Angeles Waterkeeper had expressed concerns about adequately addressing seasonality issues throughout the process. Similar concerns had also been expressed during other past WEIR efforts in the region and were addressed by adopting WEIRs that more explicitly considered seasonal effects. As the choice of one WEIR versus the other will ultimately have minor effects on the implementation of the TMDL, to be more consistent with previous WEIR actions in the region, and to provide an additional margin of safety, staff updated the TMDL to include the weather-weighted WEIR of 1.32. Next slide. Many of the comment letters submitted also included a discussion of the proposed extension to the implementation schedule. Most of the submittals referenced the timeline, although opinions were mixed on whether to shorten or extend the timeline. On one hand, commenters such as the NGO consortium and other environmental advocates lobbied for less or no extension. On the other side of the issue, commenters from the boating community asked for the timeline to be extended somewhere in the range of 3 to 7 years. The data analysis in the staff report indicates the water column copper concentrations are decreasing, but they remain significantly above the TMDL targets, indicating additional work is still needed to address the impairment. TMDLs are not self-implementing, which means until a regulatory mechanism is developed, and more importantly, adopted, most of the TMDL management practices to address the water column impairment may not be enforced. The development of a regulatory mechanism is a complicated process, and a strong, transparent mechanism requires stakeholder engagement and collaboration, which takes time. In looking at what it would take to develop and adopt a regulatory mechanism and looking at staff resources, I estimate a minimum of 2 years would be needed for a regulatory mechanism to be adopted. Next slide. Regarding current reconsideration of the Marina Del Rey Harbor Toxic Substances TMDL and the proposed basin plan amendments that were developed during the reconsideration, the alternatives for the board are 1. To adopt the proposed basin plan amendments, 2. To adopt the proposed basin plan amendments with modifications arising as a logical outgrowth of comments received, or 3. Take no action. As mentioned earlier, there is a change sheet for this board item, but it only included minor changes to the staff report and did not affect the resolution or basin plan amendments. Therefore, the staff recommendation is to adopt the tentative basin plan amendments. And that's the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much. And before we get into comments or questions, I'd like to hear from the speakers who are in the audience right now. And the first speaker is Tim Riley, representing the Marina Del Rey Lessees Association. Mr. Riley.
All right. Honorable board members, Tim Riley, representing Marina Del Rey Lessees. The staff report shows that current lower leach rate paints are still not sufficient to achieve targeted copper reduction. This is a tacit admission. A problem exists that cannot be solved without identifying paint alternatives that are effective and economically viable. Establishing a regulatory mechanism in 2 years without first identifying practical and reasonable solutions for the recreational boating community is a classic case of putting the cart before the horse. The burden of taking an active role in exploring paint alternatives should not be placed on boaters and marinas, as they are not in the business of testing and manufacturing paints. The two boatyards in the marina have been supportive of wider application of non-copper anti-fouling paints, but alternative paints must be commercially available and affordable for boaters. Another consideration for a longer extension of time before establishing a regulatory mechanism is that staff acknowledges research into anti-fouling paints is ongoing. Only this year, LA County and the Port of San Diego have started a new study to examine a recently released new non-biocide paint that supposedly rivals traditional anti-fouling paints in performance and cost without leaching contaminants in the water column. Sufficient time must be afforded to complete the study and initiate a pilot program to verify its effectiveness. In a citation of a response in the 2014 reconsideration, anchorages within the marina are deemed to congregate boats and thereby cause or contribute to the discharge of copper from a large number of boat hulls in the marina harbor. The citation contends that, quote, anchorages have the ability to control discharges and that they exercise control and enforcement over boat owners and their discharges by way of conditional lease or license agreements with owners of boats moored within the anchorage leaseholds, unquote. Indeed, anchorages can control the number of boats moored in the marina, but it is a stretch to claim anchorages control the types of hull coatings used. Obviously, boats are not painted at anchorages, and the marinas are not necessarily aware of when individual boats are scheduled to be painted. Anchorages include conditions and lease agreements with boaters, but anchorages lack viable enforcement mechanism, and eviction of boats from an anchorage are not easily achieved. The design of the marina does not allow for natural flushing, as you know. We believe the Water Board should request the Army Corps of Engineers to conduct a study to modify the design of the harbor entrance. Our comment letter raised the issue of how the Water Board would address the lack of affordable paint solutions being punitive to low and even moderate income boaters, resulting in inability to enjoy a public amenity favored by the Coastal Act. Staff response cited comment 1.13, which offered not much more than stating the boating community are dischargers responsible for copper impairment. No viable paint solutions have been offered to low and moderate income boaters. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your comments. Next, I have Director Gary Jones, who represents LA County Beaches and Harbors.
Good morning, Chair Camacho and board members. My name is Gary Jones, and I'm the Director of Los Angeles County Department of Beaches and Harbors. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the proposed reconsideration of the Marina Del Rey Toxics TMDL. Since the adoption of the 2014 TMDL, the county has prioritized the early implementation of copper reduction efforts in the harbor. We have aggressively promoted copper reduction actions, including repainting all county boats with non-biocide paints and conducting two paint studies, testing in-water dry docks, adoption of hull cleaning best management practices ordinance, developing a hull cleaning BMP training and certification program, and outreach and education efforts. We are pleased with the decreasing trend of copper concentrations in the harbor since 2016 and appreciate Regional Board staff's recognition of our diligent efforts in the staff report. The county supports the Regional Board staff's recommendation to reconsider the TMDL based on the results of our site-specific objective study. As the board staff noted in the response to comments, a site-specific water effects ratio provides a more accurate assessment of copper toxicity in the Marina Del Rey Harbor because it accounts for Marina Del Rey Harbor specific conditions consistent with US EPA guidance for any adjustment of water quality standards. While the recommended TMDL numeric target, revised load allocation, and extension of the implementation schedule remain extremely ambitious, we stay committed to protecting water quality and the environment. As such, we urge your board's approval today. Marina Del Rey is the largest human-engineered small craft harbor in North America and houses approximately 4,300 boats. We are dedicated to preserving and restoring the harbor environment for all county residents and visitors to enjoy. towards this goal in 2022, initiated by Supervisor Holly Mitchell, the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors launched the Marina Del Rey for All initiative, which promotes equitable and inclusive access to the harbor, including increasing lower cost coastal access via affordable recreational boating. As such, we are committed to continued research and identification of alternative solutions to copper-based anti-fouling hull paints that are ecologically and economically sustainable. We look forward to our continued collaboration with the Los Angeles Water Board and the Marina Del Rey boating community to ensure achievement of water quality while preserving full access to the resources of Marina Del Rey Harbor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. The next speaker would be Mr. Themis Glattman, who is representing the Recreational Boaters of California, RBOC.
That's Ms.
Glattman. Excuse me.
Thank you, Board. I am here representing Recreational Boaters of California, but also the Southern California Yachting Association, and I'm a member of the Santa Monica Windjammers Yacht Club. I'm a board of directors in all of them. RBOC represents over 700,000 boaters in California, and we're very concerned about the impact that TMDL rules will affect all boaters. We sent a letter of concern to Ms. Wakefield, in which we stated that we support the position from the Marina Del Rey Lessees Association regarding the impossibility of feasible responses to the proposed TMDL measurements cited by them and the continued unresolved issue regarding the relevance and applicability of those measurements for actual present local marine life damage. Proposed rule that offers no solutions, no storage, no remediation, no paint availability or coating substitutes, no haulage, and no alternatives is not really a solution. The main issue is that there's only limited information on the effectiveness of alternative paints and the uncertainty of the potential ecological impacts on non-biocide paints. The low-income boaters will face increased costs of non-biocide paints as well as more frequent hull cleaning, additional barriers to successful implementation in a condensed time frame. Marina Del Rey was created for the enjoyment of local boaters and not so specifically for aquatic marine life. The board has not identified or considered the extent to which boaters have been utilizing commercially based paints that have a copper leaching rate somewhere in the range of from 0 to 9.5 micrograms per cubic centimeter. And there's no evaluation of the availability, cost, and effectiveness of these paints. This information is fundamental to an effective TMDL resolution and should be developed prior to its adoption rather than during a deadline extension of 2 years. This would have an especially negative impact on the ability of low and moderate income boaters to be able to access and benefit from on the water recreation opportunities. As I mentioned, I'm a member of the Santa Monica Windjammers Yacht Club, and I have a boat in the Marina Del Rey. There are only two boatyards in the marina, and as Mr. Jones mentioned, there's over 4,300 boats in Marina Del Rey. Every 3 years, you have to repaint the bottom of your boat because the paint reduces its effectiveness. So even if every boat would have to be repainted with this non-biocide paint, there will be no availability of boatyards because every 3 years, the first people that have their boats painted would have to have their boats painted again. So this is not really a solution. And I've seen manta rays, dolphins, lots of sea lions, all kinds of birds. Even a whale was found in the entrance channel of a marina. There's an organization called Anglers Association. They actually raise halibut fish in our marina to be discharged into the ocean. So the dangers to aquatic life, it's pretty minimal at the levels that are presently found in Marina Del Rey. Thank you very much for your concern.
Thank you, Ms. Glattman. Next, we have Mr. Jim Hausener representing himself.
Good morning. Jim Hausener,
And I am the executive director of California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference. I want to disclose that because the County of Los Angeles and all the coastal harbors in California belong to it. And Dr. Nye actually talked to our group about 10 years ago on TMDLs. I've got a career of being a harbor master and talked about tributal tin in the staff report. So I worked with Nancy Richard back in the 80s, the State Water Board, on the tributal tin thing. I was part of the technical committee for non-point source for boating in California in the 90s. I worked with Dr. Lee Taylor Johnson with Sea Grant on her reports on bottom paint, and then with the Agricultural Board in terms of their anti-fouling strategy work group in the 2010s. So we've been working on bottom paint in California for a long, long time. And the issue basically is, well, how do you keep organisms off the boats? And that tends to be where we are and what we're doing. I really want to thank you for moving forward with the SSO and taking a look at what's going on there. But as others have talked about, staff has stated, addressing the dissolved copper impairment in Marina Del Rey Harbor cannot wait until a universally effective and affordable non-biocide paint alternative is available, and that the TMDL must be met regardless. I don't know what that means. I don't know if in 2 years from now you're going to put every boater's name in a hat and you're going to pull out 57% of them and say, you got to take off the bottom paint because there's no other alternative. And I think what I'm asking you to do is take a look at where you're going to be in 2 years from now. We know that the TMDL is not going to be met. We know there are ongoing studies. Ongoing studies generally mean a three-year period. What you do is you take a whole bunch of fiberglass panels, you paint them, you throw them in the water, and you come back every so often and maybe wipe them off with a glove. You may scrub them with something on a monthly basis, a six-month basis, and determine how much paint is left and what the efficacy of the paint is. And folks, Port of San Diego is doing it. The Smithsonian Institute has done it. Practical Sailor is currently doing it. And so that's what it's going to take, is a three-year period at least in order to determine what's the current state of non-biocide or non-copper. And the other part is I'd like you to take a look at putting some parameters on its regulatory mechanism. I live in the Bay Area. When I hear regulatory mechanism, one of the former executive officers up in the Bay Area says, that's a forcing. We're going to force you to do something. And I think you need to take a look at how to make sure that there are some additional parameters put down, because otherwise in 2 years, you're going to have some stakeholders saying, you got to do something today. And there were some words like could, but I think what you need to do is, what are the commercially available paints? And I'll leave it there. I do want to recommend that you take a look at the San Diego Executive Water Board, Executive Director's letter of October 5th down there, if I could overstand, back in 2022, because they've been working on this for a long time, and they've decided to change direction, and they're going to be focusing on ecological assets and effects. And maybe that's something you ought to be taking a look at as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Halsener. And the next speaker is Mr. Barnaby Baker, representing Marina Harbor Anchorage in Marina Del Rey.
Thank you for your time today. And yes, my name is Barnaby. I'm the marina manager and dock master of Marina Harbor Anchorage, located in Basin A, comprising of 319 boat slips. I've also been an avid boater all my life and have owned vessels both here and abroad, as you could probably tell. I appreciate the detailed responses from the Water Quality Control Board staff. However, I am concerned that many of their comments and recommendations made in response to our letter testimony are unrealistic and unfair to the members of the public who constitute the recreational boating community, as well as to the marinas that support them. I must respectfully challenge the perspective expressed by your staff, as stated in its response to our letter. The boating community are the dischargers responsible for copper impairment and will need to address the fact that they are actively contributing to pollution in Marina Del Harbour. To assert the claim that anchorages are in control of both our boaters and their boats is very impractical. This approach is not a constructive premise for dealing with the complex challenges the boating community, the paint industry, and multiple federal, state, and local governments must all face together to improve water quality. It is disheartening to see the staff's treatment of the boating community's sincere commitment to environmental stewardship. The Marina Del Rey marinas were developed under the terms of the coastal development permits approved by the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors and the California Coastal Commission. Our anchorages have implemented robust best management practices and policies promoted by these bodies. Our marina actively promotes clean harbor initiatives. Over the past decade, significant strides have been made in addressing environmental concerns, yet these achievements seem to have been minimalized by your staff. Proposing regulatory measures within 2 years without first identifying practical and feasible solutions for the recreational boating community is simply not practical. Bluntly put, penalizing the public before an affordable and effective non-biocide paint alternative is developed and widely available is a recipe for failed public policy. The Marine Harbour Anchorage and our tenants, who number in the hundreds and are very dedicated to responsible boating, should not shoulder the blame for industrial and government failures to develop, to test, and to make available affordable alternative solutions. Nor should we be held responsible for the unanticipated impacts of the 60-year-old design of Marina Del Rey Harbour itself and the lack of natural adequate flushing. Marina Del Rey Harbour, a man-made harbour created and funded by the County of Los Angeles, has been, by intent and decades of experience, one of the world's largest pleasure boat harbours. Increasing access to affordable recreation boating and its related uses for both county residents as well as visitors from all over the world in an environmentally sensitive way should be the goal of all parties in and out of the recreational boating community, as well as the public sector. We at Marina Harbour are anxious to be engaged in a meaningful process to come up with realistic and reasonable solutions. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your comments. The next speaker is Ms. Shauna Rappaport, representing yourself.
Good morning, Chair Camacho and board members. My name is Shauna Rappaport. I previously served as an environmental scientist here at the Los Angeles Water Board. And during my 9 years with the board, I oversaw the 2014 reconsideration of the TMDL before you today. I was involved in implementation of the TMDL, including serving as a grant manager, serving as the State Water Board's anti-fouling strategy work group, and was the lead staff during the initial stages of the study before you today. I want to thank staff very much for their diligence in continuing this effort. It has not been an easy road. I also want to thank staff for the careful consideration during the preparation of the final staff report to the comments received. The revision recommending that the weather-weighted geometric mean, as well as the inclusion of the monitoring requirement to verify the weir, will both contribute to better protection of aquatic life in the harbor. 10 years in, we have made little progress towards reducing copper discharge, and Marina Del Rey Harbor remains inhospitable to many forms of aquatic life. The action before you today has the potential to further delay attainment of the numeric targets in the TMDL. The aspect that is most likely to delay or affect TMDL implementation is the change in the salinity value that's used in the model necessary to reduce copper discharge. The choice to use the median value of the salinity data rather than the minimum will have two effects. It removes part of the margin of safety. It also changes the copper reduction discharge protected to meet the TMDL by about 25%. For comparison, incorporation of the weir only changes that discharge reduction by 5%. Future monitoring will demonstrate if use of the median salinity value is sufficient for implementation efforts to achieve the numeric targets. If the revised model projections underestimate the necessary reduction, the TMDL will eventually need to be reevaluated, and additional efforts beyond those being planned will need to be taken. My concern is that the use of the less conservative modeling contributes to a moving target for the discharger and potentially significantly delays implementation of the TMDL. I raised the previous point just to raise awareness of what is before you today. I have two requests for your consideration. First, I ask the rationale be provided why a dry weather weir, only weir, wasn't considered by the Technical Advisory Committee. Such an approach is consistent with EPA's guidance, and it would be helpful to understand why the Technical Advisory Committee didn't consider this during the study.
Second, I request that the TMDL include a timeline for development of an enforcement mechanism. This was included in the original TMDL, and its inclusion here would help document that timeline for action. Thank you very much for your consideration of the suggestions I provided today and in my letter. I hope today is a turning point towards efforts to improve water quality in Marina Del Rey Harbor, and I was very excited to hear from Mr. Riley about the new potential paint that's out there and the study that's underway. So thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Rappaport. Our next speaker is Mr. Ray Tahir.
Hello again. Can you enlarge the screen, please? There you go. Thank you. The Marina Del Rey Copper TMDL seeks to set numeric targets. CTR's purpose, however, as you know, is to establish water quality standards using a numeric methodology. A WIR is needed to make a TMDL site-specific to a water body. However, nowhere in federal regulations are numeric targets used either as a substitute or to have the same meaning as a water quality standard. Other TMDLs adopted by the board also use numeric targets to mean water quality standards and sometimes water quality objectives. However, nothing in CTR, other federal regulations, or state regs use numeric targets to mean the same as water quality standards or, in the state's case, water quality objectives. Further, Chapter 3 of the Basin Plan, which is entitled Water Quality Objectives and Where the WIR Will Reside, also says nothing about numeric targets. Using numeric targets would also frustrate compliance and make enforcement impossible in the event they are not met. The MDR sets a WIR for both acute CMC and chronic CMC criteria for establishing water quality standards for copper in salt water. It is unclear why both are used to calculate WIRs. According to CTR, the preference is for acute criterion. Note that the City of Los Angeles is now in the process of recalculating the water quality standard for zinc in several watersheds using acute criterion. Next slide, please. And there's the Chapter 3. Next slide, please. While the WIR appears to be correctly calculated, the CMC and CCC do not appear so. The CMC for copper reported in the Marina Del Rey TMDL is 4.8 milligrams per liter. I understand that's been changed to micrograms. There was a problem that was corrected recently. For the CCC, it is 3.1 UGL. So there's two problems here, nevertheless. First, one problem. It does not appear that the CMC was calculated properly. CTR calls out 4.8 micrograms per liter for dissolved copper. The equation used in the CTR table on page 317.17 is as follows. And there's the formula up there, the equation that for some reason wasn't specified in the staff report. Here are the knowns. The CMC is for 4.8 UGLs for dissolved copper, absent the recalculated WIR factor. That was converted from the total recoverable copper value using the 0.83 factor for salt water times the other part of the equation, which I won't get into, which is specified in CTR. What is missing is the hardness factor. CTR provides a range of calcium carbonate hardness values from 25 to 400 milligrams per liter. However, it suggests a real-time value derived from water quality samples taken at the same time for copper and other metals. To achieve a more confident CMC with the appropriate wear factor, the hardness value must be known. And here, the same thing with the CCC. 3.1 UGLs for dissolved copper that was converted from the total recoverable value using the 0.83 factor for salt water. And again, none of this stuff was factored into the equation. It would have been nice to see the entire math, the entire equation being completed. Unfortunately, what the staff report provides is a truncated explanation. As with the CMC, hardness was not factored. To effectuate a correct weir as part of the CCC, hardness must be in the equation. And I'm almost finished. So in terms of recommendation, please explain the need for both the CMC acute criterion and the CC chronic criterion. Change numeric targets to water quality standards or water quality objectives. Correctly calculate the CMC and CCC. Explain how hardness expresses calcium carbonate as MGLs is included in the calculation, because you're going to have, in part of the equation, you're going to have hardness, which is in terms of MGLs, and then the copper, which is expressed as UGLs. And with that, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Tahir. Our next speaker is Mr. Benjamin Harris, representing Los Angeles Waterkeeper.
Good morning, Chair Camacho and board members. My name is Benjamin Harris. I'm the senior staff attorney at Los Angeles Waterkeeper. Apologies, I've been multitasking on a different meeting that was really important, but I was trying to pay as close attention as I could to this item. I first wanted to send my appreciation to staff for all of their hard work on this entire action. I think they did a great job with the community outreach and engagement. My predecessor at LA Waterkeeper was heavily involved in the weir study and was pushing for a lot of the things in terms of margins of safety that we actually see now in the revised staff report and the proposed action. In particular, the weir value, the weather-weighted weir value, I think is a really great piece to add here. It's a great precedent to actually consider, real-time effects in the waterways based on the climate and weather conditions. That really is something missing from the entire weir process, so it's really great to see that included. I am struck by Ms. Rappaport's comments earlier about using this kind of salinity median weir value rather than a minimum, which I do think would be more protective, and so I'd be really curious to hear staff's response to that question. But otherwise, really pleased with the decision to go with that weather-weighted weir value. I think that's a really great result. On the implementation timeline, I totally understand staff's responses to our comments. We were pushing for, along with Gilda Bay, we were pushing for a shorter timeline for this TMDL extension. We never like to see TMDL extensions, right? We know when there's a final compliance deadline, we have to do everything we can to meet that. Understanding here, though, there is no implementing measure that could help achieve the results of the TMDL right now. And not to push for anything unrealistic, but I think I'm still really unclear on what is going to be happening over these 2 years and what the extension will do over those 2 years. Because in my view, if a regulatory mechanism is going to be adopted and then there's 3 months for everyone to get new anti-fouling paints, then why extend at all? Why not just keep the deadline the way it is now and have time schedule orders or other types of mechanisms to get us to compliance with the past due deadline as fast as possible? And that provides enforceable oversight. It provides milestones along the way to get to compliance without creating another panic where the new WDRs or permit is going to be adopted, and then the boaters are going to have very little time to try to figure out what to do before this upcoming deadline. And the last thing that LA Waterkeeper wants to see is yet another extension after 2026 once we get a regulatory mechanism in place. So I'm not necessarily advocating for no extension at all, but I think I just still don't understand from the staff report what the extension accomplishes itself and what we can do to minimize and prevent any future extensions from happening, so that everybody in the regulated community has a very clear sense of the regulatory timeline to comply. So that's my second question. So first, I'd like to hear about the weather-weighted median weir versus if there is an available minimum weir or why that was not pursued. And then the second is more clarity on why this extension is a really critical part of the implementation timeline to get to compliance. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Mr. Michael Quill, also with LA Waterkeeper.
Good afternoon, Chair Camacho and board members. Very humbling to be here in the midst of all this knowledge. It's quite intimidating and humbling. I'm the Marine Programs Director at LA Waterkeeper, and descended into this this work in 2007, and been swimming in the waters of Marina del Rey, well, not Marina del Rey, of our coastal waters, and these problems since then. And I'm a quotation from Edward Albee from a play called The Zoo Story, which you know, speaks for itself about how I feel about some of the things that are going on. It says sometimes you have to go a long way around to go a short distance correctly. So I'm beginning to understand that quote in more ways, more diverse ways, as I've aged into this work. So Marina del Rey is a human-made marina, and it's generated human-made problems. And I use humans in a broad sense, because in my opinion, we are all interconnected. Our divisions, our cultural divisions, our economic divisions are all superficial divisions that we have brought on ourselves, and we are stepping into this this stew in order to come together in a way of working that's more positive and more inclusive. And I am encouraged by the willingness of the community of Marina del Rey to explore options to impede the degradation of water quality in the human-made marina, and hope that community members who share their anger and outrage with me on a regular basis in the marina, the work that I do on the water, about the water quality of Marina del Rey and our coastal waters, will step up and into the efforts to improve water quality in and around Marina del Rey by taking part in these hearings. Humans have created this crisis, and humans are ultimately paying the price now for the price of their actions. While I was personally saddened to see the extensions that have been granted, I understand the process. I've been in the midst of the process. And while I do hope that this is the last extension to 2026, my expectations are that will not be the last extension. I would hope that we would kick it into high gear. I've been working with the community in different levels, but in the meantime, while this process is unfolding, we at LA Waterkeepers Marine Program are especially concerned that an affordable, non-toxic boat bottom paint is still out of reach for most of us in the nonprofit world and most recreational and commercial boaters, those that are left in Marina del Rey. I want to say that I appreciate the work with Beaches and Harbors, the efforts of Greg Shem and the Boatyard, and especially shout out to Victor Espino, the manager there. They've been very patient with me as I bring paint sample after paint sample on my boat and lift the boat out to take pictures of how it's performing, and being a little neurotic about it. I really appreciate their patience with me and the outreach from the Beaches and Harbors giving me some guidance in those areas. Thank you. I appreciate your patience and their patience as this process continues.
Thank you very much for your comments. And we also have some virtual commenters as well. And so we do have RTG Investment as well. So if we could bring them on the line. Are they unmuted?
Okay. They're on, but their mic is not. Well, they're not muted. RTC, are you there?
That's RTG.
RTG?
Yeah, we still do not hear them. And so let's go to the next commenter, and that's Marvin Sasci.
Very good on the pronunciation. Sachse.
Thank you. From Brass Industries, go ahead.
Del Rey Yacht Club also. Madam Chair, board members and staff, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak. Minor issue, the first full paragraph on page 28 of the June 2024 reconsideration aspect of TNMDL's second revision states, and a change from copper-free hull paints to non-biocide paints. This change reflects an increased awareness that non-copper hull paints have a similar environmental impact due to the leaching of other toxicants. State of Washington Report 2017. This is a hearing on copper TMDLs and waste load allocations, not on possible water toxicity from an as yet unresearched and unproduced product. The referenced State of Washington document states, If the phase out of copper antifouling paint is allowed to continue as directed under current law, we conclude that additional monitoring and testing will be needed to investigate the impacts of non-copper biocides. Based on the findings of further research, regulatory or legislative action may be needed to address any emerging concerns. The State of Washington document does not state that there is a correlation between environmental impacts of copper-based biocides and non-copper-based biocides. It states that additional monitoring testing may be needed. Taking a scientifically reasoned approach to develop a technical solution to a complex issue. To ban the use of non-copper-based biocides without further testing will suppress research and development of newly potentially environmentally friendly and antifouling compounds. These possible new compounds could well be far more environmentally friendly and cost-effective in their application as opposed to a non-copper-based antifouling material. As an advanced degree engineer in both environmental engineering and industrial engineering and a state-licensed professional engineer, it does not seem appropriate to suppress an entire field of science solely based on potential guilt by association without any evidence of harm. It is therefore requested that the term copper-free hull paints not be changed to non-biocide paints. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your comments. And also we have Richard Dynan, who is available for questions as well. And if he has anything to say as a commenter, please come forward.
I have nothing to add at this time.
Okay, thank you very much. And let me just go back to RTG Investment. Can they get unmuted? Yes, please go ahead. Yeah, we cannot hear you. Yeah, what I would suggest is perhaps to send your comments in writing. And so, because we cannot unmute you for this particular hearing. And so I don't have any other comments. Are there any other comments in person or virtually? Nope. At this point in time, then I'm going to turn to our board members to ask for questions or comments, clarifications. Yes, go ahead, Board Member Christensen.
Thank you so much. Elijah, can you come back up? Yeah, thank you. Thanks. So we heard a lot of, first of all, wonderful job. I know there's a lot of different stakeholders that you and the team engaged with, and that is no small feat. I am wondering, though, if you can tell us a little bit about what is going to be happening in this next 2 years, because it seems like a lot of the comments and questions are swirling around that.
We are going to need to develop something, most likely a permit. And so the idea in the next 2 years is to meet with stakeholders and get a deeper understanding of what they see as the challenges, what they see as solutions. We hear a lot of, there's not an alternative to paint. We can't do this, we can't do that. I want to hear what they can bring to us as what can be done. We're going to meet with other stakeholders, and we're going to talk about the options that are out there in what could be incorporated in a permit and work through, or something else. It may not be a permit that hasn't been decided yet. That's probably the way it's heading, but it hasn't been decided. And we would talk about, okay, well, here are some options we're thinking. What is your feedback? At this point, we were very focused on the TMDL, the WEIR. So that would be the point of engaging stakeholders further and kind of working through some of those issues. We did that last year. Well, last year we had the adoption of the agricultural permit, and we conducted a lot of stakeholder outreach. And we had drafts, and we said, okay, here's what we're thinking. here's why we're thinking it. You know, what are your specific concerns? You know, what are your specific recommendations? Can we work through these issues one by one, chunk by chunk, and come to something that is more palatable for everybody, you know, that takes into those considerations that they're worried about where we can, while still working towards improving the water quality. So that's, it's going to be a lot of conversations and probably some arguments, you know, but it's also going to, there are other things out there that haven't been discussed in terms of, there's technology being used in Florida looking at physical methods of keeping fouling off of boats. We haven't really had conversations with the anchorages, with boaters. I'd like to know, are there people out there who've used this? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have, you know, local data on that, but there's other things to explore. And the 2 years gives us time to have conversations, to pull that information together, and to run by the many stakeholders what we're thinking, and try to incorporate what they're thinking as well. So that's what I'm looking for over the next 2 years.
Great, thank you. And so I'm hearing then that it's not like there's this ticking clock, and on, you know, the end of these 2 years, everybody is going to be regulated and it's all going to be enforced.
Well, they'll be regulated, but it's not. As I told, I met with boaters and mm-hmm. I said, if there's nothing else you take home from my message, it's going to be, at no point are we saying 2 years from now everybody must have copper off their boats.
Right.
We have not said that. There's a whole continuum of options out there, and a lot of the conversation is, okay, we can either have the copper paints or we can have no copper paints. But there's also, like, there's paints with rates in between no copper and the maximum leach rate. So mm-hmm. there's some things we can discuss there. So that's what that's okay. going on. That my plan for, at least my grand plan for what would go on, provided right. the direction I get from the board and my supervisors and things that come up, you know, the new paint that's out there that mm-hmm. might change things. Mm-hmm. You know, if the results come back great, that, you know, that would be fantastic and we'd move forward.
Great. So. I appreciate that. And do we feel like we can guarantee that this is the only extension, or is this a reasonable timeline to get this done, or do you think in 2 years we'll need another extension?
I think 2 years is the minimum we could get it done.
Okay.
I would say we don't ever guarantee, you know. I don't know.
This is Jenny Newman. I'm going to help out here. I think it's reasonable that we do the outreach, we put out a draft regulatory mechanism, whether it's a permit or a waiver or something else, and get feedback and bring it to the board. Whether or not the board adopts that in 2 years, that's up to the board. But I do think 2 years is reasonable to bring something to the board.
Great.
And the development of the mechanism, that you don't necessarily have to extend, even if we haven't quite crossed that bridge.
Right.
So it's, you know, there's, yeah.
Understood.
Sorry. Okay.
That's it for me. Thank you so much.
Okay. Board Member Mendez.
Thank you. Thank you again. I'd like to thank staff and everyone for working diligently with the various stakeholders. And as my colleague mentioned, this is not an easy thing to juggle the various positions and perspectives of the voters, government, and our staff. So thank you. I had a question. I have two questions. The first one regarding the Rappaport's remarks regarding the salinity value. So I didn't follow too much about that. If you could maybe explain a little bit.
So a variety of samples were taken, and then of salinity data. And when it came to deciding what would be put into the model, the question was, you know, of these, I think it was like 177 data points, what do you use? You know, you have to make a choice. The model takes one. So you could go use the maximum. You could use the minimum. You could use the average or the median. You know, so that's what we went forward with was the median. And I was trying to find my notes, you know, it's kind of a little bit deep in the weeds. But part of it is, and I think I can't confirm this at this moment, but we were replicating what had been done in 2014 and kind of trying to follow that method. The model is based on like a steady state assumption. The system is in steady state. And I think from how do you reflect that with your choice of salinity? And by going with a median, that's kind of where things settle out. If you went with a minimum, that wouldn't be, I don't feel that's as reflective of steady state. And
I could add some more to that. Well, LB, if you want to.
I was just going to say that you know, using a lower number would be a way of building in a little more margin of safety, but we have an adequate margin of safety. We ensured that in 2014, and now we've, you know, gotten a little further with the 1.32. So,
yeah.
We're good that way.
And I would like to add some more, because those were both really important technical answers, but I wanted to provide a little regulatory context, because the two things that are proposed to be changed in the TMDL are the numeric target and the load allocation. The numeric target is the value that must be met in the water body to show that the TMDL is being met overall. The load allocation is the specific amount, the specific reduction that's assigned to the discharger, in this case, the boat holes. And the salinity data, I'm sorry, there's feedback, it always makes me... Let me try and focus. The salinity data affects the calculation of the load allocation. It does not change the number that must be met in the water body. It just says, we think, before we thought 85% of the boats would need to reduce or remove the, you know, get rid of the copper on the boat hulls. But now, with the new salinity data, it looks like maybe only 57%. It doesn't change the compliance value of the WEIR adjusted numeric target in the water body. So I wanted to put that into context. So it's the impact of the salinity change is not going to impact water quality in the marina. It just impacts our assumptions about how many boats or in what manner they need to reduce. I also wanted to say that the difference, because I was in Elijah's role in 2014. And the difference between now and 2014 is that we have a lot more salinity data points. I think it's 177 more salinity data points. So back in 2014, we just had...
I think it was 12.
12 data points. So with that level of uncertainty, it made sense to use the minimum. We needed that margin of safety to account for the low sample size. Now we have 177 more data points. It's appropriate to use the median because it's going to be more representative of the overall sample.
Okay. I think that the latter explanation was the most useful. So, yeah, particularly on the data points and the differences between over a decade of collecting data. So thank you for that. And my second question is just some clarification of reading the TAC report. So according to that TAC report on page 33, and I know you mentioned it in your staff presentation, that while the TAC committee, or the members of the TAC recommends it came to consensus of using one type of, there's a consensus recommendation assumption implementation of activities will be consistent year-round and not intermittent. However, the TAC members did not reach consensus on which calculation method was appropriate. However, the majority opinion favored the weighted WEIR, and the minority favored the unweighted WEIR. So again, that's just showing that of the three committee members, two preferred the weighted that included the dry weather. Correct. So there was a majority that, while they didn't come consensus on recommending which one to use, looking a little bit deeper into the TAC report, two of the three wanted the weighted measure, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make that clear for the record. Thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair?
Good.
Thank you, Chair Camacho. Well, first of all, I'd like to express really gratitude to staff for all of the work that's gone into this, all of the outreach, all of the time, and really thanks also to all of the presenters here, the members of the voting community, the county, thank you for being here, the nonprofit representatives, and these are some difficult issues to deal with. So I do have some history here because I was on the board in 2005 when the TMDL was first adopted. And what hopes and prayers we had back 19 years ago, and here we are 19 years from then. So I'm somewhat chagrined that we're back here after all of this time, but here we are. I understand completely the reconsideration in 2014, the need for the SSO, and we have the results of that at this point. I think, let me stop and say this as well. There were a couple of comments that were made by the presenters, which I don't believe represent the attitude and the views of the boating community that enjoy the marina. I think there were comments such as, well, the marina was created for the pleasure of boaters and not for the protection of aquatic life. I don't think that represents what the boating community truly feels. I believe that they believe that with the enjoyment of the marina comes a responsibility for protecting it, comes a responsibility for avoiding harm to it. I don't think it's helpful to say, well, we're not in the business of choosing paints. All of us who enjoy this planet have also a responsibility to take care of it. So I want to make that comment because I don't think that those kinds of views are representative of what the 4,300, I don't know how many boat owners they are, but how they feel about their responsibility. Having said that, the question then becomes, what is going to happen now in the next 2 years? We started at 2005 to 2014, and now 2 years. So on this, I understand that you said, Elijah, that it's going to be a minimum of 2 years. But the question is, what will you bring back to us in 2 years? Will it be we need more time? Or will it be what I hope will be what Jenny explained, that there will be some mechanism, and we're not expecting that in 2 years there will be some kind of draconian set of enforcement actions, but at least that there will be clarity on what it is that is going to be required of the boating community going forward. And so I think, Jenny, this is what you said, and that's what I would like to see reflected on the record. And I would, since you're in charge of this program, I would like you to confirm that.
The intention is to bring, probably before 2 years, because it takes a little bit of time, but some regulatory mechanism, a permit or a conditional waiver or something that implements this TMDL. That is, and I'm working on our 5-year plan right now, which is part of our programmatic management, and so that's being included in the workload of the unit. So it's part of our plan for the next 2 years.
And yeah. Vice Chair Nahai, to the extent you're asking of the substance of the thing that we're going to bring you in 2 years, Elijah and I agree, and LB agrees, that it will contain enforceable steps, concrete actions that all the responsible parties will take, not just general wishes or intentions, but will be specific enforceable steps. What Elijah was being open about was what those steps would be, but we will bring you specific enforceable milestones and steps.
Okay, great. Okay. I'm satisfied with that, and for the comfort and assurance of the members of the boating community who are here, that doesn't mean that right there on 2 years there will be immediate enforcement, but there will be clear steps as to achieving the goals. Yeah. And with that, I would also support the 1.32 WIR that you've recommended. So that's all that.
Okay, I just have one hypothetical question: is if we were to not provide any extension today, how would you ensure that this TMDL is met today if we were to go forward and say no extension? How do you go about saying or determining 57% of the voters do or don't comply? I mean, how would that go, and who would be responsible?
The TMDL, in terms of the water quality, is not being met at this time.
Yes.
And that would remain true.
Yes.
And we would still take, even without the extension, we would still take about 2 years to bring a mechanism that could be enforced and that could help people figure out the best way to implement the TMDL. We wouldn't be able to enforce any boater or any, you know, potential permittee, because we don't have any permittees at this point. Mm-hmm. So a TMDL, as you know, that's the plan.
That's right.
All by itself, it's not enforceable. So we have to have an enforceable mechanism of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically, not providing an extension would really bring us to the same spot, 2 years, in order to develop a permitting mechanism to hold permittees accountable. And to provide a mechanism for enrollment, who needs to enroll, who's responsible, is it the anchorages that are responsible? I think there's a lot of unknowns that have to be worked out. And I think that a two-year period, I mean, I almost don't want to call it an extension, it's just a period to develop, you know, a way in which we could develop a mechanism to enforce the TMDL requirements, because there isn't one that exists right now, and it's not an easy solution. And so with that, I just wanted to, you know, figure that out. And it sounds like we wouldn't be in a different spot if we were to do that. And so right now, we're just being very upfront of what the work is going to look like and giving ourselves a reasonable timeline to accomplish that. And I, too, want to really... you know, I see how hard staff has worked to really reach out to all of the community, the participants here, the different stakeholders, and I really wouldn't want to second guess, you know, the tack in which, you know, they brought in a variety of voices in there to determine the WIR number. And I think that going with the 1.32 provides the additional margin of safety that we're talking about as well. And it doesn't appear from, and I just want your confirmation, that it is going to, the difference between 1.32 and 1.4 isn't going to be a huge economic difference in terms of, you know, potential permittees compliance.
No, I don't believe so. Those numbers really are very close in terms of what kind of actions people might have to take. It's, you know, very, very close.
So they're pretty much the same actions regardless, but it just gives us that that additional buffer of protection in there without undue, you know, economic issues being laid upon the permittees.
Yeah.
Okay, and those are the questions I had. So any other discussion on this item? Seeing none, do I hear a motion?
I'll move to accept staff's recommendation.
Okay, so we have Board Member Christensen with a motion.
I'll second.
Okay, and Board Member Mendez seconding it. And so I'm going to call for a vote.
Chair Camacho.
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Vice Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all of the community who spoke today. I really appreciate you being here as well. And you give us a lot to think about. And again, there's a lot that the industry has to do to ensure that, again, it goes back up to manufacturer responsibility as well, and that we have to push forward, continue to push forward for safer products being out there. And I know that somebody else also talked about the ability to talk to the Army Corps of Engineers to try to develop more circulation in the channel. But again, when you look at any type of reduction program, we start with source reduction first, rather than constructing, you know, hardscape or anything like that to improve the situation. Let's start at the top. Okay, thank you very much for everybody coming. So we will move on to item number 10, and we have closed session today.
Yes, so I think we're going to be waiting. I'm not entirely sure if our Deputy Attorney General is available quite yet, but we will be moving into closed session on item 10J, and that item is litigation that the LA Water Board has filed against other parties. It is identified as State of California, People of the State of California, the Moore and Lawrence Oil Company, Leach Oil Company, and affiliates of both of those organizations, as well as Rev 973. This is authorized by Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision E2A.
And so after closed session, we will consider the meeting adjourned then. We will not be coming back out. But I just want to state for the record that our meeting that's scheduled for Thursday, July the 25th, is going to be canceled. And so our next regular board meeting is going to be September 26th, 2024. So everybody have a nice summer and see you in the fall. Thank you very much. And then now we will be going into closed session.